Let's get back to Mel's interview with Doug Brown on accidental hypothermia. The previous segment focused on the hypothermic patient without vital signs, and a little on the patient with vital signs, but unstable. For the patient without vital signs, first decide if they're salvageable. Not always easy if there's not a good or clear history, but if you're going to resuscitate, it's ABCT, airway, breathing, circulation, and arranged transfer to an ECMO CPB center.
CPB center.
Or if you're at such a center, get them on ECMO. But many patients we see are going to be cold but have a heartbeat. Should they get ACLS drugs? How should we rewarm them? And is there a role for pressors in a hypotensive hypothermic patient?
With vital signs.
Here we go.
They're in a bad death-defining rhythm. Is there a number at which you have to warm them to before you even bother giving them meds? Or you are suggesting that maybe, you know, warm them 5 or 10 degrees Celsius and then try with your meds again? Or is this, so do you do it both ways? I get them to 32 and I start using my meds. I get them just 5 degrees warmer and I start using my meds. All the time doing CPR. And
if you look at the European Resuscitation Council recommendations, they recommend a modified approach to advanced life support consisting of up to 3 defibrillations with epinephrine withheld until the core temperature is higher than 30 degrees. They say no epinephrine until 30 degrees Celsius. If you use epinephrine, the time between doses should be doubled until the temperature is 35 degrees Celsius. Interestingly, it's almost opposite to the American Heart Association guidelines, which state it might be reasonable to consider administration of vasopressors during cardiac arrest. And the reason they have a controversy is essentially they're quoting two different studies. There's one study that shows epinephrine doesn't work, and there's another study that shows it does work early on. And so the practical approach that I suggest for everyone is when you've first got your patient, you're doing your usual ACLS algorithm, give them one dose of epinephrine, give them one trial of electricity if you see a shockable rhythm. But if that doesn't work, don't keep persisting. And instead wait until they warm up 5 degrees and then try one more dose and then wait until they're above 32 degrees. And essentially, once you're above 32 degrees, if the patient is clinically dead, they're in asystole, and your resuscitation measures are not working, then hypothermia is no longer the cause. And you obviously need to rule out your other causes of potentially reversible asystole, but you don't need to worry about hypothermia anymore.
What about the use of central lines? It's something that comes up in our department all the time. Should we or shouldn't we be putting central lines in? What if we tickle a heart? Is that worse?
The practical answer that I give most people is do the things you need to do to provide the care you need. That being said, with central lines, what I suggest is essentially shallow lines. So if you're going to put in a subclavian, put it in shallow. If you're going to put in a femoral line, put it in shallow.
Doug's suggestion with the ACLS drugs or ACLS protocol, epinephrine electricity, when you're first beginning your resuscitation, give one dose of epi, one trial of electricity if they're needed. If that doesn't work, warm them 5 degrees and try it again. And once they get above 32 degrees and they're still in asystole or still dead, it's probably not the hypothermia that's keeping their heart from beating. With central lines, use a shallow line to avoid tickling the heart. Things like movement and any kind of cardiac stimulation can make your patient go from stable to unstable very quickly. Let's explore the other side of this treatment algorithm on the hypothermic patient with vital signs.
So your hypothermic patient with vital signs that's unconscious, we divide into cardiac stability versus cardiac instability. Any patient with cardiac instability should be transported to an ECMO CPB center, and we define that as a systolic blood pressure less than 90, ventricular arrhythmias, or a core temperature less than 28 degrees Celsius. For all your unconscious hypothermic patients, you want to handle them carefully, do minimally invasive rewarming, and expect that they might arrest. One of the controversies that people ask about all the time is this concept of rewarming causing cardiac arrest. And everybody's worried that they're going to rewarm these patients and that cold blood is going to rush back from the heart, cause them to have a cardiac arrest and kill the patient. There's been lots of controversy and lots of talk in the literature about, oh, should we rewarm? Should we not rewarm? Should we keep them cold? And when we looked at the actual literature and the case reports, we divide this into rescue collapse versus after drop. And rescue collapse is a real thing. As soon as patients are cold, basically any time they're under 32 degrees Celsius, they're at high risk of a malignant arrhythmia. And especially when they're under 28, it gets even higher. So if you have a patient that's cold, under 32 or especially under 28, you should expect that they might go into a malignant arrhythmia and have a cardiac arrest at any point during your resuscitation. It's not caused by anything that you've done. It's just the natural history of accidental hypothermia. Cold patients go into cardiac arrest, and we call that rescue collapse. This concept of afterdrop has been very difficult for clinicians to get their head around. There's excellent physiology studies that demonstrate afterdrop. It's a real thing, but it's not clinically significant in our opinion. So when you take these healthy patients and you cool them in ice water baths and you do different things to them, you take them out of the bath, you start rewarming them, and their core temperature will drop anywhere from a quarter to 0.75 degrees Celsius. And that's what afterdrop is. And there's lots of great literature and experiments demonstrating it. But it's not a clinically significant or clinically important entity. And so you should not worry about rewarming your patients. You're not going to cause a clinically significant afterdrop that's going to cause them harm.
In the unconscious hypothermic patient who has vital signs, who has a pulse, two treatment pathways, those with and those without cardiac instability. Any cardiac instability, meaning systolic pressure less than 90, ventricular arrhythmia, or a core temp less than 28, transfer to an ECMO CPB center. Otherwise, if none of these things are present, minimally invasive rewarming and handle carefully, which means minimal jostling, and anticipate cardiac arrest. And then there's this idea of the core afterdrop causing cardiac arrest. When the patient starts to warm, the extremities, which to this point have been vasoconstricted, start to vasodilate, and the cold blood sitting in those extremities gets circulated to the core and can actually drop the core temperature. The problem with this, or at least theorized, is that it can cause cardiac arrest. But is that really the case? Your cold patient may arrest at any time. Be prepared for it, because the cold heart is very sensitive. And why does it happen? Is it caused by this core afterdrop? Probably not. On the one hand, it's an academic point, because does it really matter why they just went into cardiac arrest? We know that it's a reality in hypothermia. But on the other hand, it's very important, because you should rewarm, and you're not going to get a 10 degree core drop when you rewarm. Doug says that the literature shows it's less than a degree, so it's okay to know that this happens, but also note that it shouldn't stop you from rewarming your patient. So that's all well and good. But what I really want to know is how to rewarm my patients. I understand the thoracic lavage and ECMO, the bypass, but most of the hypothermic patients we see aren't going to get to this point. They're going to rewarm with basic measures.
Take us through, what do I do first, second, third, and fourth when it comes to rewarming? Obviously, throwing a blanket on somebody is step one, but is there a accepted protocol for increasing aggressiveness? Again, let's say that the ECMO center is 15,000 years away, and I just have to do it all myself.
For a patient in cardiac arrest, in hypothermic cardiac arrest, with no chance of transporting them to ECMO, what I would suggest is that you do high-quality CPR, prevent further heat loss by insulating the patient, putting a bear hugger on, warming up the room, give them a trial of electricity and epinephrine, that you then insert a bladder lavage. If you have the capability to insert a peritoneal lavage, you do that as well. And if you have the capability to insert thoracic lavage, you do that as well. But these are only for the patients that you can't transport to ECMO and CPB. And essentially, you rewarm the patient with your focus always being on the high-quality CPR. You watch their core temperature. Every 5 degrees that it comes up, you recheck for a potentially shockable rhythm. You might give another dose of epinephrine to try it out. And then eventually, you'll get up to 32 degrees Celsius. Once you're above 32 degrees Celsius, you'll give it one more try. And if the patient is dead, then you'll stop.
What about the more difficult circumstance where they're pretty cold, but they're alive, but you feel the need to aggressively warm them? Do you have some particular triggers that say, okay, this person I need to put in the chest tubes, I need to get invasive versus I don't need to?
For unconscious patients with accidental hypothermia, in general, there's no benefit from invasive rewarming. So you should put this person on a bear hugger. You should handle them carefully to try and minimize the chance of triggering a malignant arrhythmia. Bladder lavage has essentially no morbidity, so that is reasonable to use. If you need to give them fluids clinically, use warm saline. You can microwave it, or if you have a fluid warmer, you set it to 38 degrees Celsius, and you just monitor them and use your normal clinical supportive care. If the patient shows any signs of cardiac instability, so ventricular arrhythmias, significant hypotension that's out of proportion to their degree of hypothermia, there is evidence to show that they could benefit from invasive rewarming. Ideally, that would be in the ECMO CPB center, and there's no evidence whatsoever to recommend whether or not you should do a chest tube lavage or a peritoneal lavage for those people, not even case series or case reports.
They're stable, they're not having arrhythmias, even if they're really cold, just let them circulate, passively rewarm them, give them some warm fluids. But if they're trying to die, going to V-fib arrests, they're doing bad things, then you have to be more aggressive. Is that right?
You got it.
So you've got your young, healthy, well, previously healthy hypothermic patient, and they have vital signs. No benefit from invasive rewarming, meaning no need to put in that double chest tube jacuzzi lavage. Bladder lavage, no problem. That's not invasive or as invasive as putting in a couple of chest tubes or peritoneal catheter. Go ahead and put on the bear hugger, give some warm saline if you're going to get fluids. But if they start to show signs of cardiac instability, then consider the invasive rewarming. No evidence to say that they're going to benefit from that, but there's also no evidence to say that they're not going to benefit. What they need is to get to an ECMO or bypass center. Now, what do we do if this patient becomes severely hypotensive or is severely hypotensive? They're not in arrest, but their systolic pressure is, say, 60. Do we leave them there? Do we leave the pressure at 60 while we try to rewarm? Is there a rule for vasopressors?
The patient is got a pulse, but they're very hypotensive. Should I or shouldn't I tighten up their vascular tone with some vasopressors? Vasopressors bad or vasopressors not so bad?
I'm going to duck a little bit by talking about physiology for a sec. Hypothermia causes some of the most profound vasoconstriction and myocardial irritability of any medical condition. Early on in your treatment of this patient, I don't think there's any role for vasopressors. They're already as tight as they can get. All you're going to do is increase their myocardial irritability and increase the chance that they go into cardiac arrest. So early, vasopressors bad. Later on, after you start rewarming this patient, if you've been successful and you're starting to introduce some vasodilation, at that point, the risk-benefit ratio might change. And so if you're seeing significant hypotension that you think is from vasodilation, then I would reconsider using my vasopressors, keeping in mind the risk that hypothermic patients are very irritable, and adding vasopressors are just going to potentially increase the cardiac irritability and maybe tip you over to the point where you might have a perfusing rhythm go into a cardiac arrest. You need to be extra careful if the patient also has frostbite, because obviously life over limb in this case, but if you have a patient with significant frostbite, the vasopressors are potentially going to make that frostbite worse. It's just one more thing to think about as you're trying to piece together and make a good clinical decision.
What about shivering? Is that bad?
Shivering is the most fantastic way for a patient to rewarm themselves. We love shivering for rewarming. One of the things that my author group is looking into currently is trying to find a way to treat trauma patients in the mountains for their pain without getting rid of their shivering reflex. We always like to treat pain, but we are worried that, especially in trauma patients in the mountains, if we give them narcotics or maybe even ketamine, that we're going to impair their shivering and we're going to cause more harm, because as soon as we impair their shivering, their core temperature is going to start to drop, and trauma patients and hypothermia are a deadly mix. And so we love shivering, and one of our future areas of research is trying to sort out the best way to treat pain without impairing shivering.
The hypothermic patient is vasoconstricted, giving them vasopressors early on, no good. You're putting more vasoconstriction on top what is already severe vasoconstriction. Later on in rewarming, when there's vasodilation, pressors may get some benefit. Now, shivering, bad in our induced hypothermic patients. We want to keep them cool. But here, in the accidental hypothermic patient, shivering is like free lunch. Yes, there is such a thing as free lunch. And it's right here, shivering in hypothermia. For those of you living in countries where they're saying there's no such thing as a free lunch makes absolutely no sense. It means you can't get something for nothing. But shivering is free rewarming.
With shivering, you can get rewarmed without any additional cost. Remember, shivering, it's free rewarming.
Well, maybe they'll need some sugar to keep going, but pretty much free.
Shivering, all it takes is a little sugar, but otherwise it's free rewarming.
Now, this is all well and good, all of the things that we've talked about. And if you're listening to this, you're getting the most up-to-date thinking on managing hypothermia. But these are things that your consultants might not know. They might not be up to to date, and what Doug is doing is developing a chain of survival in his area so that everyone from EMS dispatchers to paramedics to ED providers to critical care, everyone is on the same page as far as what to do. If you want more information on this or you want to pull it up during one of your shifts, you can, of course, go to the MRAP written summary or you can go to drdougbrown.ca, drdougbrown.ca, which is Doug's website. You can download the New England Journal paper, which has a great algorithm. Pretty much everything that's been discussed in this talk comes out of that algorithm. It's so simple and it's very clear. He's also developing a hypothermia guideline for his province that hopefully he'll put up on his website when it's ready. Now, Doug and I went over this interview and the commentary after it was all done just to make sure that all of the high points were hit, and a few things were left out and they're going to need clarification. We didn't talk much about fluids, and during the cooling process, patients tend to become volume depleted from vasoconstriction and cold diuresis. During rewarming, they're going to require significant volume to replace the volume they've lost and to keep up with the vasodilation of rewarming, so expect 2 to 5 liters. And when suggesting that pressors may be reasonable during rewarming, it should come with a caveat that you filled up the tank or you're temporizing while you try and catch up with the fluids. And if during rewarming you think you've got the tank full, patient's in sinus rhythm, and you're still needing pressors to get a reasonable blood pressure, that should probably be a red flag that something else is going on. Tox, sepsis, that may be the cause of the hypotension out of proportion to the degree of accidental hypothermia and may have also been the cause or contributed to the patient becoming cold in the first place. And then a point of clarification on ECMO for patients who have vital signs but have cardiac instability. There's some literature, several case series, to support the statement that accidental hypothermia patients in cardiac arrest have improved survival treated in an ECMO CPB center. Unfortunately, it's much less clear, and really there's no literature to say that patients with cardiac instability but they have vital signs will do better if transported to an ECMO center compared to being treated locally. But we know that patients with cardiac instability are at high risk for arrest. And then if the patient arrests, they do much better at the ECMO center. And that's why Doug's consortium recommends transport of the unstable or high risk patients, ventricular arrhythmia, hypotension, core temp of less than 28. And one final thing that Doug wanted to get in was the International Hypothermia Registry. It's hard to do a large randomized control trial. And a lot of the information that we have that we know is reporting of hypothermia cases. So we'll put a link to the International Hypothermia Registry in the show notes, trying to get centers to contribute all of their cases, and that's really the only way we're going to get better data and learn how to best manage these patients. And that's going to wrap up our talk about accidental hypothermia. But there's more. We're going to delve into some of the details and finer points of induced hypothermia when we come back and talk to critical care man, Dr. Scotty Weingart.